Yeah.
It's all about, it's all about being connected.
I've heard that in the day. That's what we're talking about.
At least if that circuit board was within your lap.
It's good
to get electricity. That's okay. Is that slide deck?
What's that?
Is this new?
Ladies and gentlemen, the Holly Communications Committee meeting of April 7th will come to order. Can I have a motion to suspend the rules and move right into our informal
so
session? Second. You have a second? All those in favor?
Aye.
You can vote. If it doesn't matter. Okay, so now we're in the hybrid wireless. What's the name of our group? The
hybrid wireless
towns group. And welcome. It's a great group we have here today. We have a challenge because in previous meetings we've been a net exporter of pizza. So I'm going to ask you folks tonight to hunker down and see if you can eat that second slice. If that's okay. The purpose of this meeting, just in case there's any lack of clarity, is primarily to share information. We got together a small group, and it was basically started by Hussein through a lot of telephone work and some email, because there were several offices or several towns. I keep saying offices because I used to work in a business where I had offices. That for one reason or another thought that they really needed to take a look at wireless as an alternative to fiber optic cable. And I would say one of the major drivers was cost. Certainly is for Hawley. When our townspeople found out the kind of assessment we were going to be considering funding, they didn't wait for us to put a on the warrant. They put an item on the warrant and gave us very clear guidance that we were not to spend anywhere near the $1 million that was going to be asked to wire this town. Since then, we've kind of developed some other things we do, and as I see this group, one of the things that we do very well is share information all the time. And it's, in my experience, it's been a very open group, and I think that's one of the reasons that we keep coming back and at the end of the meeting say, even if we're tired and a little bored, we say, when's the next meeting? Because of that process of sharing.
Just what, and speaking of sharing, Joe Kern sends his regrets because he has a finance committee meeting tonight. Right. So he asked me if I could record it for him, so I'm attempting to do that.
Okay, and we're also recording it, so if yours doesn't work,
oh, good.
Maybe ours will.
Yeah, we even have the same recorder.
I've never used that before.
Not in an informal session.
No, announcement.
Okay, yeah, no, because we bailed out of the formal session.
Okay.
Can we do an introduction on the
next? I'm sorry if I'm not moving fast enough for you.
Okay. I just didn't know.
And that's really the next thing on the agenda is just to go around the room and each person introduce yourself, your town, and let's see if we can make a contribution to the art of brevity. Rick Keene, Hawley. Thank you.
Pamela Shrimpton, Hawley.
John Sears, Hawley.
Trevor Maggie, Charlemont.
Kent Liu, I'm an interloper from the town of Washington, where I'm the chair of finance.
Jeremy Dunn, a fellow interloper from Beckett.
Kevin Donovan, the town of Holland, Massachusetts.
Mark Twing, Holly.
Eileen Saujo, I'm the chair of the Coleraine Select Board.
Welcome.
John Tynan from Savoy.
Do people get his name? John Tynan?
Yeah. Steve Harris, I'm chair of the Communications Committee in Middlefield.
Todd Corcoran, MBA.
Welcome.
Dave Chauvineau, MBA.
Cornell Robinson, MBA.
Leslie
Rowland,
no, thank you.
Were you going
to
say
MBA? I was.
We're hiring.
John Hardy, Royalston.
And that's our group.
Ten different towns represented here.
Yeah.
Is that brief enough?
I bet.
Well, we've had a number of people who wanted to join us over the last 3 or 4 days.
That's great.
Too much was happening for me to even keep up with sending it out every time, but somehow we are on the map. I'm not sure that's totally a good thing, but that's where we are.
They heard there was a new band in town, so I want to come see the band.
Right. Exactly. Let me hand out an agenda. We find that these agendas are guidelines rather than strict rules. On the back of your agenda, on the second page, is a list of everybody who was invited to this meeting. And
do you have this in electronic form?
Sure.
That'd be great.
And we'll be sending it out after the meeting. But it's everybody who was invited, and then it indicates those who were coming. But go ahead.
Rick, email me a copy of the sign-in sheet once we get done with this.
Do me a favor and remind me that.
Okay, we'll go.
In the email later on.
Would you email him and come? No, I'm sorry.
Thank you very much. One of the things that I did want to do is to share a little bit of correspondence that we received over the last couple of days. One was a note from I'm trying to get his name. Good boy.
But
you're good. Yeah. And we also received a note with some rather lengthy observations by John Kowaleski from Princeton, who was kind of the grandfather of this whole process. He was the first one who kind of struck off and started doing things. And he hasn't come to every meeting. He's been to a couple, but he's always attentive, and he wants to hear how the meetings go, and he likes to make his comments. This is what he sent us this time. The first one was that he just wanted to let us know that Egremont and Hardwick are reportedly working with Matrix Design Group. This may mean more to the rest of you than it does to me. They believe that they have a way to move forward and still adhere to MGL 44-8-8. The next one was that MBI is supposedly pushing towns to work with Comcast, and we, Princeton, have an inquiry to one of the towns that has claimed to have had that discussion with MBI. We, in other words, they're trying to find out about it. We've been contacted by MBI to do so. We have requested a meeting with MBI and Comcast for next week. Maybe when we get into the discussion, you can provide any background on that.
They're pursuing white fiber or both?
Not clear from John's note.
It's a hyper build with Comcast that is potentially interested in doing. I mean, Comcast, if you look at Princeton and the geography, Comcast already has adjoining towns. So it would be a matter of extending their cable plant into that town. We're trying to work with them to get more specifics right now. They just approached us on this a few weeks ago, so we put it on the table with Princeton. Obviously, Princeton is heavily involved with their build right now, and they were like, whoa, what does that mean? We're not sure either. We're just kind of putting it on the table because we were approached by Comcast.
So we're really talking coax here, right?
It's a hyper, so it's a combination. You know, hybrid fiber coax is typically what they do. It probably isn't the new DOCSIS technology, so it's probably like 150 meg max. But I have a meeting with Comcast tomorrow to get more specific. So that's about all I know, really.
John also said that there's an engineering firm that has a software program that will run wires or place radios for your town and tell you what the fiber counts and costs are. It will even help you plan rollout, not unlike what Royalston did. The name of the company is nocplan.com. I think I need to send this out to everybody just so you have the information. He said that the make ready on utility poles is costing us $11,000 per mile. Verizon is being difficult from his perspective. They say that they're having a hard time finding a position on some of the poles, partially because of where the cable, the fiber optic cable, was placed in the middle mile. That was it. The other note we got, an inquiry we got, was from a guy named Tom Wyatt, who's in Warwick. And he was very much interested in becoming a part of this group because they're going to be doing, they're looking at doing a combination of fiber and wireless. They just received a proposal from Fred, fill in the last name, Fred
Goldfield.
And so he's there with his committee and whoever else are doing a formal review of that proposal tonight. Sorry he couldn't make it. We also received an inquiry from New Braintree.
Right.
Whose name I can't remember at the moment, but he kind of was initially interested, and we haven't heard much from him since. But
where's New Braintree?
Isn't it over kind of by the gate or something?
Okay, yeah. No, New Braintree is
over by Barry.
It's over by
Barry. Say it again?
It's in this quadrant of I-91. It's east of I-91. It's below. Above.
There's a seat for you down here if you want one.
There's a map of that. It's in that area.
All right, so south.
South.
Did everybody get that? It's kind of south and east.
You can make it down
here.
I don't know.
I'm a little wider than you give me credit for there.
That's all over.
Thank you. I don't know where the sign up sheet is.
Cheryl's from Charlemont.
Hey, Cheryl. That's what I have to report in terms of correspondence from the outside group. I hope that you find that useful, that we keep that kind of communication going, as well as the people who can make every meeting, because we've got a lot of meetings, most of us, and we do what we can. At this point, I'd like to turn the program over to Dave Charbonneau, and I'm not exactly sure what he would like to do. We ought to give him the opportunity to do it early in the program.
I appreciate that. I brought two of my distinguished colleagues here that introduced themselves. Cornell Robinson, to my left, has about 6 years with the NBI, was heavily involved building the middle mile network, has 10 plus years working at Booz Allen on wireless projects for the government, so has a lot of wireless experience under his belt. Certainly, if you have the opportunity to talk to him, either through questions and answers here or, you know, after the meeting or other opportunities, he really does have a really strong background on the wireless side.
Can we get business cards from everybody?
Absolutely. So, yeah, the wrong number in emails, but you can have them. To my right, Todd Corcoran. Has over 20 years working in the carrier industry from a program management standpoint, from a construction management, from an engineering standpoint. Joined the NBI about 8 months ago now.
Yep.
Todd and I worked together at One Communications, CTC Communications, Earthlink. So we've built a lot of fiber networks, a lot of carrier-grade networks. Less on the residential side, more on the business side. But certainly there's certainly differences in those two things, but the technology is very similar. My career started almost 30 years ago working at Digital Equipment Corporation. I'm sure, you know, maybe somebody in here worked at that small company at one point in Massachusetts. Yeah,
I used to recruit people out of there.
Yeah.
As a headhunter.
Working on their global infrastructures, you know, and I bring that up more so that I think about where technology has evolved from. Everybody's talking about Ethernet now. We were working on Ethernet 25 years ago, you know, when really Digital was one of the ones that championed it, when they kind of more or less purchased a lot of the patent stuff from Xerox that developed the Ethernet standards. So it's kind of come full circle now that we have Ethernet down at a residential layer, which is awesome because it really simplifies the way networks are managed and supported as well as providing a lot of bandwidth. I mean, coming here tonight, what we really want to be able to do kind of the do's and the don'ts of, we're not here, we're what we call ourselves is the technical team. We're not the the political team, the necessarily the decision makers on policy decisions, on allocations of how much money towns are getting and things like that. We're a design construction group, a project management group. We're here to help with RFPs, RFIs, assist the towns with things from a technical nature, as we have so far in the pilot, the wireless pilot with John, as we're working with Steve and the group from Middlefield, you know, on their proposal as well, and others as they come in. We have Holly's now, at least in a draft format as well. So we do a lot of reviewing of those documents, an assessment of the documents, and make basically recommendations up through the organization to say, you know, yay, nay, green light, red light, or send it back to the respective towns and ask for additional feedback, which we often do. You know, I mean, there's no standard template. We're actually trying to help the towns in developing some standard templates around, call it a readiness assessment that has to do with business plans and finance plans. But, you know, right now, you know, what we're doing is we're receiving different feedback from different communities, and we're working with that information as it comes in. We were in, Elizabeth and I were in Tolland. Did I say it right, Kevin? Tolland?
Yes, you did.
Nice. See, it is Tolland. Then we met with the select board members and Kevin, the MLP and broadband committee manager there on Tuesday, you know, and had a great conversation, you know, just about what they're looking at, what the opportunities are, you know, and similarly as we join you here tonight, we're really looking at what is this group about, you know, hybrid wireless. Often people will say, well, the NBI's project or the state's project was all about fiber. The state's project was about bringing broadband to Western Massachusetts. State's project and focus started 5+ years ago when we built the Middle Mile Network. As you see at the Community Anchor Institution here in the town hall, you know, we extended this network out to 123 different communities, ultimately with the 44 or 45 unserved communities that were flagged unserved with no broadband, limited broadband capability. The goal was to connect these towns and give you, you know, bring broadband service to you. Early on, we worked more aggressively on a fiber plan. There's no doubt about that. A lot of our modeling, a lot of the efforts that we put towards were all around fiber to the premise. As it evolved over the last year or so, we certainly started to hear more of the interest, a lot, you know, from John and Royalston bringing his project forward and starting his pilot and getting us more engaged in the wireless side of this. You know, clearly, as they said, there's 10 different communities represented here, with more chiming in to Rick. You know, I think it's amazing, you know, and our position is still to bring broadband. We do, you know, the only thing that I'll talk from a policy standpoint is, you know, we do have a policy that speaks to, you know, 25.3 service to match what the FCC requirements are. We have recognized that our policies need to evolve as well. What does that mean? I don't know yet. Only that we recognize that our policies need to evolve. When we put requirements out, sometimes we look at the data that's available to us. If you look at wireless technology and what's happened with wireless technology over the last 3 years, I mean, it's really come leaps and bounds. I mean, to a level where it's opened my eyes. I will tell you, I'm biased on fiber. It's what I've more so done in my career. I've done a lot of wireless systems, you know, in buildings and things like that. I've worked on some macro cell towers when I worked at Tilson Communications. But in general, you know, what was available for wireless was fairly limited. Put it down to like a fixed wireless system, which is kind of what the focus is and really what works in these communities. So it opened our eyes, and as we worked with the governor's office said, look, this is about affordability. It's about making sure that the communities can take on these assets and have something that, one, is viable, but that they can afford to maintain it. And clearly, wireless is a lower cost option than fiber. I don't have to go into all the details, technical details of why wireless has, you know, bandwidth limitations compared to fiber. You know, there are pros and cons. And those trade-offs at a level have to be made on at a town level to say what can we afford versus, you know, do something or do nothing, we often say. You know, so doing nothing is not the answer. Doing something may be a wireless solution for the communities. So the governor's office approved a few months ago, or asked us, and we brought it to our board, an initiative called the Broadband Wireless Study. The Broadband Wireless Study, which, as you would think, is a study to help. We have created, as I said, this whole these town profiles, and certainly we need to get some of this information out to the communities too if you don't have these profiles. But at a fiber level, what it would look like to build, you know what the construction numbers are. We have provided those on a town level. This takes it to another level on the profiles to look at sustainability at a level of if you charge $60 or $80 and having different take rates. So it just looks at the operational component of a fiber network. This study will go out and try to bring a apples to oranges comparison of fiber versus wireless. You know, and they are apples and oranges, clearly, right? But that's all right. You know, they're two different technologies. So the study we are asking, you know, we sent it out to about 13 different engineering firms that will ask them to give us a technical evaluation of the available technologies that are out there in the industry. And this is across the gamut of 4G, 5G, LTE type technology, fixed wireless, terrestrial, low-hanging, when you deal with the governor's office, everybody has kind of a different opinion, so they want to make sure that we looked at all the things, you know, so satellite all the way down to, you know, I would say, you know, the lowest level of really a fixed wireless system. So the engineering firm will evaluate that technology, but also look at the technology, as I said, that things have evolved over pretty significantly over the last few years with wireless, is that they'll look over a course of 10-plus years to say, all right, so if a town chooses fixed wireless, what is the total cost of ownership of installing wireless over a 10-year period? Do you have to replace radios every 2 years or 3 years or 4 years, you know? On fiber systems, we know that the electronics, we create depreciation reserve. Every 7 years, you look to refresh the electronics. The outside plant fiber is 20. The Leverett did 20 years. I recommend 30 on the depreciation line. Wireless may have radios being replaced more frequently, so that could be a cost to the communities. These types of things are going to be looked at in the engineering study, and from that engineering study, they'll give us a recommendation. Now, we have some experience in the room, a lot of experience amongst this group, but with folks like Cornell and Todd, you know, who have, you know, worked on these systems and have said to me, look, they've, you know, ultimately it's likely they're going to come down to some type of fixed wireless system, you know, 2.4, 5 gigahertz, 900 megahertz, probably not. But you know, they'll look at that, those frequency ranges and that type of fixed wireless technology. And from that, I'm saying that's likely what they're going to recommend. I'm not telling them to recommend that. I'm just saying, based on the terrain in these communities and what we've talked with other partners like John, Steve, and Middlefield, we know kind of what works in this terrain, along with TV white space. I didn't mention that. So they'll take their recommendation, they'll give that to us, we'll check that box, and we'll ask them from that recommendation then to look at the communities and build from doing a propagation study, a desktop study, not a field study. Tools are available. You just mentioned something that John told you. There's a lot of tools that are available. Some of them are very expensive. Others you can get right on the web and look at them. But each of the equipment manufacturers has their own, you know, tools as well. They'll do propagation studies, and from those propagation studies, with this, with the recommendation of technology, they'll build CapEx models that will tell us what will it cost to build a wireless network in each of the 44 communities. From that, we'll ask them to take it to the next level of saying, all right, now we know what it costs, take those costs, and now tell us what it's going to cost to operate that network in the 44 communities. From that, we'll ask them to take it another level of sustainability. And sustainability is a component of those two things that I just mentioned, but now it adds in a level of taking, you know, operator costs, take rates, what am I missing? I mean, a whole gamut of things that we'll look at on the sustainability side.
And the total cost of ownership meant things you mentioned before. So equipment refresh.
Equipment refresh.
So taking all of those and put them into a big equation that says you either break even, make a profit, or you're not going to be able to pay your bill.
Question down there, and then I got one.
Let me just go through my spiel here, and then we'll just open it up. You know, so those three models will be built and delivered, and can be delivered to the communities, obviously for your consumption and education at a level, as well as our education level, to see truly at a side by side, what does it cost to build a fiber network and operate a fiber network? What does it cost to build a wireless network in these communities and operate that wireless network? There's other activities that we'll have them look at in this study around current WISP, you know, wireless ISPs that operate in you know, this space. At one point, if you look back even 5 years ago, maybe 10 years ago, there were probably 3,000 WISPs that were operating. That's below 1,000 now across the nation. So you've seen that scale back. What we've seen, though, is that the traditional WISP market, some of those people have shifted into just being an ISP. So it's that hybrid nature of the business. They're still supporting wireless systems, but they support fiber as well. So we'll ask them to talk to those operators. We'll ask them to get a sense of the success factors that they've seen, how they're selling their services. So it'll give us a more insight into building these models as well. You know, and then as I said, they'll be added to these town profiles that will give us a pretty decent comparison. So before I turn it over to questions, I just want to give Todd or Cornell, Todd first, did I miss anything?
No. Looking at it here, you're all set?
I didn't even look at that. I should have.
Yep.
All right. So I'm sure that opens up a lot of questions.
Go ahead. I'll let you go. You were first.
It does open up a lot of questions. So what I heard was that you have three different phases of your wireless study going through different different permutations and steps. Do you have a timeline for that?
Yes.
I mean, and what is that timeline? And my second question would be, you feel it incumbent upon to do this for every town, regardless of whether or not the towns have an interest in fixed wireless or are ready to proceed. You're still going to be doing it for 44 towns. So it seems to me that there's, and what is the cost of this?
I'll start with the last question. You said there were only two, but you asked three.
My apologies.
That's all right.
Can I get friendly?
So let's hit the cost. We don't know. We're not sure. If I was going to estimate something on the scope of this effort, anywhere from $200,000 to $500,000. We'll just say it's a range in that. All right. On the the idea of removing some communities from this, we've had that conversation pretty extensively internally. There's towns like Royalston and Middlefield that have already gone through a pretty extensive effort with InterAisle that, ultimately landed them. It was a study that landed them. At some level funded by MBI as well. That is still being discussed. What the governor's office wants, at least what we're understanding they want, is something that they can have as a comparison so that they can then go and say to the communities, as we're understanding what affordability means, is understanding what the towns can borrow, that we can look at the two cost levels. So that's still an open item. And then I forgot what your first question was.
Timeline.
So it's a 12 week effort. We released it on Friday. We sent some additional documents out. We added a couple vendors on this past Monday. We hope to, we have a conference on this coming Monday, a vendors conference, a mandatory conference. I think we have five or six that have responded so far.
Five at this point.
Our goal is to have a contract in place in June with the firm that we select.
Okay.
And so that, think of from June and then a 12-week effort, you know, that we would then work through those steps, as you said. You know, it's kind of, we look at it as kind of a two-phased approach more on the technology side versus building the models, but two or three. You know.
So it's 2 months till you get the responses back from the 38?
No, not for responses back, but 2 months before we are ready to execute a contract with the selected vendor that we think is the best.
Okay.
May 3rd. The responses are due May 3rd.
The responses are due May 3rd, and yes. I'm assuming this is not a rolling deadline. And then it will be 3 months before you expect a final report.
Yeah. And in their response, they're asked to provide a project plan for how they would execute the work. And we've said specifically that we think it's a 12-week effort, but if they provided the justification for why it might take longer, we would still consider them.
A 12-week effort.
So it's pretty fixed at the 12-week.
Okay. Is that going to go out? That did not go out for comment to any of the towns?
No, it did not.
Okay. And what has happened? I will pass my question because I was going to go into something different. I will pass on that. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. John?
Go ahead.
I just had one quick question. Hussein had his hands up. We heard some rumors that there are half a dozen or so MBI people who are out learning about wireless. Just a rumor?
We had gone through some Ubiquiti training with one of the manufacturers a couple of weeks ago, the technical staff did, to learn some of the manufacturer's products. But that maybe is what you heard.
Okay.
So.
In response to your question, Ubiquiti is the product that we've been using successfully in Railstead. Just FYI.
And the only reason we chose Ubiquiti was because the training course itself had a lot of
theoretical vendor neutral
wireless components to it. It also came with a certification test at the end. So we just wanted to make sure that we level set certain people at MBI with the same knowledge about wireless.
Hussein has his hand up.
Yeah. Two questions, and so sort of a observation. First, understanding fully that you folks have to do your due diligence with all of this, there are, and you've recognized this, some towns that have done at least tabletop assessments, and I'm sure you can understand that whether towns want to pursue fiber or wireless or what have you, we are getting a little anxious to move forward. The second point is... a question that now that you have come more towards wireless, whereas you were looking more at fiber in the past, will we get the design money to look at wireless? Because currently the design money is only for regional fiber, but there is an allocation appropriated for each town, earmarked for each town, and I think that whatever we pursue, and this has definitely been Middlefield's position, and I think that Holly feels the same way, and a lot of other towns, we would like the design money available for us as well as the build money.
Question down here.
So mine is a follow-up just on that, which was as you're bringing wireless into this, will you have a formula for how that allocation is divided, or will it be sort of based on the existing formula, which was based on fiber miles? So I think affordability to towns really comes down to what the state will help us out with in some cases, at least in Charlemont for sure. And I guess my second, I had one other question, which was, looking for it right here. Will the models that you develop from this, the desktop models that you develop, will they be accessible, like all the formulas? Will we be able to see how those numbers came about? Will we be able to see the data and the formulas that went into that as counts?
Yes, we've asked the engineer to provide all their assumptions that that are going to come up with this cost modeling. So yes, those will be available to, so you understand what their assumptions were when they came up with these costs.
And as far as all the questions on allocations, I think I mentioned as I started my little speech here that we're not in a position to discuss allocations. The points are taken, they're valid comments. We don't take them lightly. Certainly it's an internal discussion that we're trying to figure it out, honestly. It does change the game when you throw wireless at this stuff, just as you said, and yeah, we're trying to figure it out.
And I guess the only reason I asked is, piggybacking on Hussein's comment, but also you made an assertion that says Middlefield will be level funded, don't worry. And I'm thinking, how does that affect the rest of the calculation?
What assertion did we make on Middlefield?
I heard in this meeting that you said that would be, I believe the word was level funded.
No, I never said that.
Okay.
Not here.
I think Trevor was next.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Trevor, go ahead.
Yeah, okay. Some of the towns have already done a preliminary study for the towns, like Fred Goldstein has done for many of the towns. Are you saying you're going to redo those studies? And it sounds like that's a yes.
Well, so I would say that we have an RFP that's going out, and we are going to get pricing on a town-by-town basis. And we will make a decision within MBI on which towns we want the study to include in or not include. We're going to get pricing for everything, but we have yet to make that decision on which towns to include or not include. And Dave said earlier that towns that have done a significant effort already are one of the things we're going to discuss when we consider whether or not we're going to duplicate a study for those specific towns.
And a follow-up on that, on using your fiber program as the baseline, you basically said no input from the towns. Are you going to allow the towns to have input now on any of the wireless hybrid units?
Absolutely.
Because, in my opinion, MBI's policy has been, we will tell you what's best for you and, in essence, screw you, town.
That's a misnomer for sure. As Dave was alluding to earlier, there's going to be a document being sent out over the next few weeks, a town readiness assessment. And within that document, you'll see a decision tree document. So that a lot of towns have been asking, when are we going to start to have input on what we want to build in our towns. So this will be our first step to start reaching out and, you know, check the boxes of what you guys would like to see and have, so that we can start our little what I'll call a database, so that when the engineers do come on board, they will have a starting point of what you're looking for in your towns.
Can you explain that a little bit more? You're going to have like a laundry list in each town is going to say, we want this, we want this, we don't want this. We've done this. We think you should move forward. We're tired. We're done. Let's go. Okay. That's just
one question.
Can I just clarify? Just a quick clarification. To whom will those be sent?
The authority, the designated authority in the town. So either the select chair or who they designate.
All right. Very
so it's not going to be open for everybody to respond to.
All right.
John, how soon do you expect that?
Well, it's still in the works. You know, I mean.
Hold on. This gentleman's been waiting a long time.
Okay.
It seems like this would be using less poles, right?
Absolutely. Right.
So
definitely.
The build time, the make-ready work is just probably negligible as far as...
For backhaul primarily.
I mean, are you going to... You got to use some poles to put this wireless on? Or how? Because I would think that it's going to be a shorter build time, shorter make-ready time.
Mm-hmm. In that context, you're absolutely right. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. The answer is yes.
I mean, estimating by how much?
We don't know right now.
Yeah. No?
Well, can I comment?
Yeah.
So there's a fixed processing time that the toll owners have to process any given make-ready application.
We're talking for fiber.
Correct.
Yeah, okay.
And there's also two ways in which to provide a connection to your tower or other monopole or whatever your antennas, your base station and antennas are mounted on. You could do it wirelessly or you could do it with a hardwired connection, a fiber optic connection. Both of those scenarios would require less make ready than an entire wired fiber build. But just because we put in less applications, the processing time remains the same. So there's a point where we could potentially saturate Verizon or another utility's ability to process. They might tell us to wait, hold off, or we're still doing the first batch. And in a wireless scenario, there'd be a lot less likelihood that we would ever saturate them. So we would complete it in one processing chunk. So there could be a time savings there. Just trying to give a little bit more detail.
Sure. Yeah. Could I take that down to another level? We're not using any of Verizon or National Grid's poles for our townwide build-out. Zero. All of our poles, typically 55 foot high, are access points. They're all built on by right town property, optimized for height and accessibility, mapped to every house, and which is most appropriate. Our townwide network is about seven modules, gigabit network. Gigabit, think about that, folks. Gigabit network, wireless gigabit network. And that goes, and because of the South Village design and testing, we dramatically modified the way we looked at the model for wiring the town wirelessly, and we've gone to a pod cluster model in which access points talk to a specific group of people, next access point, specific group of people, shorter throws, higher frequency, higher capacity, easier to maintain, and I would make a couple points earlier. Most of the technology is now remotely programmable and remotely upgradable. So that addresses a number of the questions about refreshing the technology. The projected take rate by our engineer and our network operator was 100% less than we actually got. In other words, our network engineer and operator projected that our take rate would be this much at this frequency. In fact, we have this much at this bandwidth because people are part of the process. So what I really want to say is that the underlying issue from our perspective, the underlying issue here is not about the technology. For us, that wasn't the problem. The problem is, are you customer-centered or are you network-centered? If you're customer-centered, then what happens just past the CPE becomes critical and life-saving, in our case, the network, or not. If all we're doing here is building technology, we've all got it wrong. And our experience says that. So when we look at the modeling that MBI is doing, and the towns wanting input, I would say that the best input that we could give MBI would be to say, to pay attention to what happens just past the CPE. And say, what's the quality of that experience to all of our towns, to the people getting the service? Because the WISP model that we've discovered is just enough is good enough, and that's BS. It's not acceptable to us. So when I'm describing this process and looking at the willingness, I mean, a year ago, we came forward with a proposal that was outrageous, off the wall. 800 emails later, literally 800 emails later, I'm suggesting that there is a willingness to proceed on a collaborative, cooperative basis, and our experience has been nothing but positive in that regard, and that what we learned from our experience at the core was that our attention to the customer experience, was everything, not the technology.
Great. Amen. Do you want a break for pizza before it gets too cold and then pick up at the town reports afterwards?
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you.
That's my point, Mark.
The difference.
We have done a couple things for you. So we've done another round of your new proposal. So we just started documenting all of that. So we have another group of questions for you. Your question in reference to Chesterfield Tower? Chesterfield Tower? So just to your knowledge, is MBI has an agreement with DCI. We have the ability to sublet DCR space on those towers for a 5-year period. What we're doing though is directly back to update our MOU with DCR. So we're going back to DCR, getting that agreement back in place. So once that's in place, we'll be able to give you a video. Final answer on the Chester Tower, but I think it's very bottom.
What they're using is about 50% are using 5 and 5, and about 50% are using 25 and 10.
No, I'm not.
And about 45% are using 15 and 10. About 35% are using 10 and 5. Just using. It turns out that what we're charging for what people are using matches our cost just like a mirror. What does it cost us? So let's count 5 people.
5.
That people are buying an experience.
So it seems like it's very positive at this point. Again, we have to renegotiate everything with DCI, but as soon as that's finalized, we'll give you a good answer.
Okay.
But it looks fine.
And I think
I'm not going to bring back an information. Speaking in estimation of having the process within the argument, they know the
impossibility. Okay.
Just we're all on the other hand.
Sure.
Part of what is happening is that people
Yes, that's great. Oh, yeah. Hey, those towers are out there. Why not use them? You're looking for a backhaul on an MVP, it looks like, right? So we'll get our agreement back with them, make sure everything's copacetic. We'll share what we know.
Definitely get wrapped up.
Okay.
It's certainly a starting point.
Yes, we have some more questions.
It's a starting point, but it's not.
Anyway, I want to review the. I'll probably just schedule something to come out there and see again. And then review your timeline, your budget, because there's something we see mistakes. So we want to show you everything that we see and see what
you're talking about.
Yeah,
well, when I was talking about Sean,
you know.
good thing that I don't, being a,
So Holly's proposal states, you know, what kinds of TV white space they're looking for. You guys would do the TV white space model to see if it works for you, to see if they want to use it. I want to keep that store happy, dude.
Well, that makes sense.
They have good food. That's something to eat.
Like my father, he's 88, and you know, he can't remember like which way to turn in the dining room, but he wins Jeopardy every time they try. He can remember everything from the past. So when is your niece coming next, like, and you're, you know, the ones who bought the house?
Actually, we're coming out of Ryan and his dad are coming at the end of the month.
Sure, it's more difficult here, right? The canopies are really dense, so.
Oh, that's great.
It's exciting to figure it all out.
Oh, they all live in Alaska. Yeah. That's where he's from?
Yeah, right.
Oh, wow. I can't imagine. I've never been there. I mean, I like the warm weather, so I can't imagine.
I don't even deal with it. It's not even my...
So Rick...
So he probably
won't... I think it's...
Oh, that's good. Wow.
Yeah. So we were on the road, the temperature the RP was ready to go off the drive and drink, bring on board, but then we're over at the governor's office.
Good.
Every house.
We're stuck in the middle. We can't wait to come out
here.
We
got a lead, so
we want to build. That's what we're here for.
I'm off my hat one off.
You want us to stay through that? So it's just and we saw some issues with the budget. Duplication.
What does it do to
omissions? So we want to show you all that stuff, right?
Engagement with Middlefield engaging with other towns.
There's a concern that about the cost of your hiring.
I can only tell you what my team would do.
But it would be a help. It would be safe for somebody else to show that you
guys I don't know what year that is.
It's less than 12 hours per mile.
We don't have anything to do with the money side.
I do reserve the right to
do. Now, what about the little cab that they store? Because I was talking to Bob Taylor, and he said he'd like to take it away. See, I told him to contact you, you know, and you can contact them. But he would like to move it and put it on his property. So, yeah, talk to Bob. I mean, that would save them money. Because he would just take it away and still have it. I mean, if it's worth it. I don't know if it's worth it.
Happy to be a tenant location.
I guess Richard Gould? No. He has no idea. He just drove by and I guess he's looking for a little cab. But I know Richard Gould's
like, I don't kind of get like a plate,
right? That's what I heard. Yeah, he's a TV cabin.
We're finalizing our executive summary. We've got to share that with MBI, MTC. They'll give their input, then we'll schedule a meeting with you.
Okay. So, as long as we
is Greg still on this committee? It's Greg.
It's
Greg
only one person. Yeah. MBI, we'll check out the team and give their input.
He gets jammed for help.
Yeah, I guess he would at night. Yeah, I can see that.
It's called retail.
Yeah, I can see that.
Just get the stylus on this.
Right, so I stopped him. And that's what, and the PWA study that we're doing, we planned it right around where full foliage too, so that the study's going to be done.
Yeah.
You know, we're doing, hopefully do some site surveys, full foliage, some difficult locations, and see how well. The engineer will come back with their recommendations and
stuff like that.
Yes, well, that's just a bitter conference. I get questions for several sort of documents. But I had to be good. Let me stand up for a little bit.
Only when he votes. I never really talk to him.
There's a piece of pizza over there with your name on it.
All set, thank you.
He says he doesn't get around much.
He's had a large lunch.
Where did they come from? Where did they come from? I know she's awesome.
computers.
Yeah, maybe. That's great. I hope that somebody else comes to that.
Are you meeting your pizza quota?
Yeah, I've never been in it. It looks little. Do they? I know they had a yard sale about a year ago. They had another one. I wonder if they have He said that's really funny.
Hey everyone, if you haven't yet had pizza, there's still pizza up here.
And it's delicious.
Pizza's over here.
It's amazing.
It's amazing.
Hopefully we'll convene soon so we can move on and eat while we talk.
That was the first call.
You tried.
I didn't have dinner on the way back from the
The Bruins game's on. Big game tonight. Well, he could watch it on. Oh no, he can't. Sorry, he can't watch it on the internet. Stream it.
Here,
Boston against Detroit. Go, folks. Let me hit him with it.
Oh, they're ignoring you.
I like that. I see.
You wanted to use that thing.
You get the sense of the culture.
I was president of our association.
Okay, folks. We could spend all night asking questions of Dave, but we also have some questions of each other. What I would suggest is that we move on to the part where we do
office reports. Each report has a 5-minute limit, and they go in the order on the agenda with New Marlborough first, Hawley second, Middlefield third, Plainfield, if they so choose, fourth, Savoy, Plainfield, Coleraine, and Lewiston. Those were, I got you.
Yeah, thank you.
And if you want to just say all that and have a nice day, that's fine, too.
I could do that, too.
Okay, so, and I think that some of the other stuff will come out during the course of the discussion, but I'd really like to hear New Marlborough. How you doing? Are you here? They didn't make it. Well, that's...
So much for that.
Okay, Hawley. Lark, can you give us a report on...
I can.
Town of Hawley.
As I tell people, I've been very involved with Wired West because I've been hoping against hope that somehow we'd figure out how to get fiber to our town. But when I went to the last Wired West board meeting a couple of weeks ago, I came away with the sense that nobody was going to fund Wired West to build the network. And Hawley was never going to be able to participate unless somebody else was funding it. We'd never be able to do it as a town like some towns can. So I came back and I recommended to the committee, I said, you know, I think it's time that we move forward with the plan that we had for wireless because we're never going to get the fiber. I'm quite confident. And then we had some discussions, and one of the concerns that I have is Hawley's a small town. We have 81 people who said they want broadband internet, and that's all. And we're looking at a wireless system that it's going to cost us between $300,000 and $400,000, and then the cost per month is probably going to be on the order of $100 to $120 a month. Not because of the cost of the broadband, but because of the replacement cost of equipment. And we were figuring 5 years, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years would definitely change that. So we felt that we really needed to crunch those numbers a little bit more. We have a plan and we think we can reach all the people that want to reach. Some of them will be reached with white space and get a relatively, you know, maybe 5 megabits per second. And some will be reached with a nice 5 gigahertz signal and they'll get 25 without any problem at all. People will be everywhere in between. But we need to go back to those 80 or so people and say, you know, if we built a wireless network and it cost you $120 a month for that wireless network, and here's the speed that we think you could get, do you still want it? Most of those people are on satellite. So they're paying 60, 70, 80, 90 bucks a month. There are some, my friend Rick, not very far from me, who uses AT&T, and his bill is probably more like 200 a month.
My fi. The overage charge.
So... we were going to put $150,000 on the town warrant because that's the amount if we got all the build money from NBI, which our share was $250,000, we figured we needed $150,000 in order to make sure we could put up the towers. The poles aren't very bad, but the towers are going to be expensive to put in, and we need one or maybe two, depending on what landowners give us in the way of access to their property. But At a meeting recently, we decided we really are premature in going to the town for that money because we don't even know whether the people who want broadband are willing to pay what it will probably cost. So we have some homework to do.
And testing. The other issue that came up was testing.
We're perfectly willing for a while to sit back and watch the progress at Royalston and the progress at Middlefield make with testing because Middlefield in particular is going to be doing, you know, all three that we're looking at in their test. And we would want to do a test as well, and our test would probably be right here, and we would get 25 or 30 houses. We would probably put a 50 or 60 foot tower here with an antenna on it, because this is where the middle mile connects. And then we beam down to a pole. None of these are towers. We beam down to another pole, and then that would beam right up a road where there's probably 15, 20 homes. So we'd be able to get a good test there. Whether we get to do that this year or not really depends on, you know, whether MBI got to the point where money was available. Because right now I don't think any money is being released to anybody, even if they have a plan. That's a question I have for John and for Middlefield. Have you had meetings with MBI, and are you still money all tied up? That's a question to you guys.
So Holly's done?
Is that taken? I'm done.
We're done with, yeah. I mean, we're gonna have another meeting Monday to hash some of these things out, but we're kind of left with a couple of questions.
Okay, just to address a few of the things. I mean, we worked with Fred to come up with a comprehensive plan to cover the entire town, which would be rolled out over 2 years, maybe even three by now. You know, 15, 16. And our aim is to meet the. It's not really an. I don't think it's an FCC requirement, but that we would meet the 25-3 standard with all, you know, in all locations possible. Hopefully, them all. Because of the improvements in TV white space stuff that's coming out, so it might be a game changer there. But I think eventually we're getting there anyway. You know, just the technology is evolving. Period. So our aim, and after talking to the tech team, which, you know, we did have discussions with the tech team, so it came up. It was decided, especially with the pause in funding, it made sense to break out, in particular, the pilot costs from the project. So we did a separate breakout of the pilot costs, and we gave them a detailed shopping list of the items that would be required for the pilot. So we're working through that at this point. At this point, we don't expect to do the whole build out the entire town this year. We'd expect at least to get the pilot done and get all the data that on the propagation, see how it fits with our propagation modeling,
yep.
The actual on-the-ground data or on-the-pole tower data. And the pilot would erect like a 100 or 120 foot tower monopole at the transfer station. So that would reach a considerable amount of the town. And so we would test out the various antennas, the white space, the 5 gigahertz, the 2.4 gigahertz, on that, from that monopole to like 32 test locations. So hopefully we'd gather enough data that could be applicable to other towns. And, you know, if it works in Middlefield, it would probably work anywhere else. and we don't want to, it doesn't make any sense just to do easy 5 gigahertz shots, because that's not really telling you very much. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're going to make sure that we're testing on the most adverse conditions as well.
Well, we can lend you some adverse conditions.
Yeah, I'm sure you've got them.
Don't we? We feel sorry for ourselves, real good.
I can't speak to the funding and all that, but we are working with them to progress on our plans and hopefully to get the pilot moving shortly.
Well,
and there are other towns that we've been talking to. We've been talking to Peru. Fred and I went out, met with the Peru Select Board, and a lot of people from town came. And we had the meeting in Montgomery. We've been talking to Montgomery. They've come to our communications committee meetings. We went up there when Dave and Elizabeth Copeland were there a couple of weeks ago. So there's a lot. The whole word has gotten out that there's another game in town, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So and we're hoping to get going and have a lot of solid data that other towns can use as well.
Do you mind if I piggyback a little bit on that?
So a couple of things have come to our attention. So as Dave alluded to a little earlier, our concern with Middlefield's proposal initially was with TV white space. We're still trying to ensure that each town has a minimum of 25.3 capability in the town. We have just learned recently that the new Gen 3 TV white spaces will be able to have a throughput of above 25. So we haven't seen the white pages for these yet. Hopefully we'll see them around June. Middlefield is hoping to pilot that program. So we want to learn more about the TV white space side of the house before, you know, we give any positive feedback.
Yeah, you don't know until you've actually done it, you know, and you've got the equipment in hand. So
Jeremy's got his hand
up. May I ask a question? Two questions, actually. One of the things that we read about from MBI was that they were going to require each town to have a very comprehensive and thoroughly vetted financial model. I'm wondering, does your town have a very comprehensive and thoroughly vetted financial model? The second question is, who are you looking to use for an ISP?
The ISP, the build, all these things will go out, you know, on RFPs, you know, to contractors, whoever gives the most favorable bid to us. So, and again, we'd be working with MBI, especially if we have talking about multiple towns, you know, and hopefully, you know, if there are the promise of multiple towns, then we'll get more people wanting to provide the services. No, we're not favoring any particular vendor at this point. That all has to be determined, just like they're putting out an RFP for their study.
And to my first question, do you have a thoroughly vetted financial model to the point that Dave was making earlier, that they're looking at not just the CapEx costs and the OpEx costs, but the sustainability, the long-term financial viability?
Well, the thing is, the wireless, fiber definitely isn't sustainable. The with the wireless, we estimate, given like a 60% take rate, that we'd be talking about like $70 or so a month in cost, and that I mean in charges, and that would cover our OpEx.
You know, and I'm cracking on this point, sir, but you used the word estimate. Do you have a model that shows you that at a certain pay rate, or is it just the back of the envelope that we're
calculating? No, it's not a back of the envelope.
We have a financial model.
We have specific costs. You know, we itemize all the costs. You know, and you know, in the spreadsheet, and that's what it comes out to, based on a certain number of customers and estimates of what the operating expense, what the depreciation costs and replacement costs. It's all factored in there. Yeah.
Just for some clarification, those of us who have gone for a plan, all of us so far have used InterRile and Fred Goldstein, so he's taking the learning from each town as he goes along, but the plan that he gives us the build specifications, but it also gives us the information about the OPEX and the replacement cost time framing and the likely cost per user based on what percentage of take rate did you get and that sort of thing.
So you basically plug your town's numbers into his existing financial model?
No, he gives each town
a number. So he's building a financial model that's specific to each town.
He's probably got something that he plugs in, but
right.
We don't have
it. Yeah, you can go on our Middlefield website and see what we have there.
Go ahead. Oh, all right, John. Sorry.
Yeah, I know you guys can't talk about money, but it just seems to me that while this study is going on, it would seem not very efficient to delay doing a pilot like this at Middlefield. Funding a pilot, you would be getting data that would be extremely valuable and less theoretical than perhaps what the study would turn up. And it seems to me that maybe those two things could go along at the same time.
So the way that I'd answer that, along with the whole term of pause, is there any pause in the way that Todd, myself, or Cornell are responding this evening?
No.
Is there any pause in the discussion of what we're dealing with Middlefield?
With respect, sir, there is.
And the pause is
that you said that you were going to take... You've issued an RFP,
You're expecting the response for that RFP in 1 month. You're going to choose a vendor in 2 months. You're giving that vendor 3 months. And that the governor's office has requested that you do these studies so that they have a comparison basis. So for the towns like Beckett, for example, where I'm from, that are very much interested in wireless, in a fiber network, that is to say, we're looking at a minimum of 5 months before anybody's been willing to look at giving us money. So in my mind, sir, yes, that is a pause, a very long pause.
Jeremy, it's just not accurate, okay? So we can argue it all day long. No, the reality is...
But not in this session.
Jeremy, we are working. We are working, okay?
My question is about spectrum security with TV wave space. Maybe all of you guys know, but I've always heard that the one issue is just that you can't be guaranteed that spectrum. Is that something that you're addressing in the middle of the
What, the access to the spectrum?
Access, and how secure will it be moving forward beyond a few years?
Well, okay, you know, again, this is more of an engineering question, but we figured in our hill towns, like especially in Middlefield, there's enough. We're not likely to have anybody else occupying that TV white space, and I believe other additional TV white space will become available in the future. Or?
Right now, for Middlefield, there are six channels available, and for Holly, there's 11. So those channels are. Those radios are required to check in with the FCC on a 24-hour period. If those channels are busy, they just switch to another channel out of the six or the 11 that are available. So it's in our opinion that those channels aren't going away. Mm-hmm. They may change, but I don't think they're going to go away anytime soon.
And do you get to, like, is there a choice that you can lock in that spectrum, or is that just you're using what's available for as long as it's available?
The radio works with the FCC, and that radio talks back and forth to understand what channels they can and cannot use.
So it's not like purchasing.
You can't own that spectrum. You can't own it. Unlicensed.
No, it's unlicensed. Yeah.
The FCC could send it anywhere, any day they want to check it.
And every day you check in and just see what the rules are today.
That the radio does, yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you.
And there's actually more spectrum opening up on that, right? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
So moving along, Charlemont, report. Do you have one?
No, we're still just looking at everything that's available out there and trying to make a decision.
Yeah.
You know, it's a learning curve.
Oh, yeah.
Like all of you guys are going through.
True.
And I think I'm particularly heartened to hear Middlefield is testing a pilot under adverse conditions.
I want to see what happens because that's really what I'm curious about. I've heard lots of reports for ideal areas, but I'm really interested to hear what happens with that. Okay, great. Thanks, Trevor. John, we have another John from Savoy.
Well, we just received our planning grant yesterday.
Oh, great. Congratulations.
Super. So we're moving forward. We're working with Fred Goldstein. And we've talked to him a couple of times. We haven't gone too far. That's about where we are.
Right. Am I remembering correctly that you have a fair amount of DSL in your town?
Yeah, it's got to be well over 80% of the town.
Really? But you still would rather...
Well, I guess it isn't there.
Yeah, I just comment on that. You know, we like 74% of our houses are supposedly covered by DSL. I mean, I don't know what percentage of people actually signed up, but you can't sign up anymore. You know, and it's going away. Verizon wants to get rid of it. You want to do a 10-year study of the future of DSL? I don't think FBI will care about it.
I'm just relating to our first conversation when he said it.
Okay.
So you're not getting resistance from people in your town because of DSL?
There have been some people, but not many.
That's right.
Just people that live way far out.
Oh, well, we've got two of them, so. Okay, this way.
So good luck with it. Good luck with that grant.
Yeah, we're going to keep plugging away and watch what Middlefield is doing and you guys are doing. It sounds interesting because the way our topography is working, but we're a big plateau.
Well, I hope Fred comes and
drives your roads, and you get a chance to go with him and climb some of those hills. And
yeah, he's done a little looking at some of our, we have a Borden Mountain, which is pretty high up, that would cover a large area where our residents if we were to get on. They have a couple of towers up there already.
Area 51.
Good. So, John, in reference to your planning grant, and you received that call from Sean Cunningham today.
Yes.
So we're trying to reach out to Savoy just to let him know about the planning grant, what it consisted of. Not the planning grant, but the BWA study and what it consisted of to ensure that he wasn't duplicating, spending money on something that's already going to be completed over the next few months. But you can use that planning grant for whatever you want.
Yeah.
But just, if you wanted to save some of that money for something else, since the BWA study will cover some of that. So.
Yeah. Yes, it's, these big, large studies sometimes, they don't always come out to be what they are planning to be, I find. We've been involved in some other studies that were pretty comprehensive. I mean, they went on so long, and by the time they came to their conclusion, you couldn't really come to a conclusion, it seems, because there wasn't enough information in the study. I don't know if that's going to be the case with the study you guys are planning on.
This study is going to be a full propagation for each town. That's going to be part of the study, so it's going to be a full desktop modeling, and maybe we'll include specific site surveys in certain towns.
Yeah, these are 44 towns. It's a lot. I mean, the sustainability part for wireless is a little curious because of the change of the equipment so quickly that I need to plan that out for a long period of time. It would be difficult to do, I would think.
Yeah, I'm hoping that when the model comes back, they're going to come up with some type of formula to figure all that out, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like just from what you gentlemen have said about the last couple of years and changes in wireless, that within 6 months to a year, the equipment could be vastly different cost, different longevity. It's hard to say.
The study is they're required to do a 10-year study, a roadmap over the next 10 years.
Which would be difficult because we don't know what the technology is.
So hopefully they'll be working with vendors and getting all that information.
That's what you do is you work with the manufacturers, and the manufacturers, there's standards that develop in the industry, whether it's IEEE or these different standards bodies, what are they all,
ATF.
They develop the standards, the manufacturers jump on those standards. And then what we're asking this engineering firm to do is talk to the manufacturers, look at the standards bodies, look at what standards are out there, but then work with the manufacturers. So it's really the manufacturers that drive the propagation of the product, right? Because it's like long LTE, right? I mean, there were other things that the carriers could have used. They jumped on LTE. So all the folks that were doing LTE started making more LTE. That's why GPON on a fiber side has never died, because there's a lot of people that use GPON. There's a lot of ports sold for GPON versus active Ethernet. So again, when we talk to the manufacturers on the fiber side, same thing. We look at the roadmap to understand what do they have planned, along with where the standards bodies are going, to improve those products. So you can extrapolate it, and then you look at the usage. You look to see Moore's law, all the things that tell you that the consumption is going to increase. So you'll look at that longevity, but there's no perfect formula, to your point, because as I say, what we've seen in the past with these radios is they were being replaced every 6 months to a year. What we see now with the technology is that it sits today. You may be happy for 5 years. That may give you enough bandwidth in your community for 5+ years. So those things we're going to talk to the engineering company a little bit about and see if we can factor in, they were satisfied with DSL for this long, or had DSL. Could it be appropriate, or could they be happy with 25 megabits of service over a 5-year period? With your input, we'll talk to you more about that. But to Todd's point about your grant, give us a call. Let's take this offline. We'd like to talk to you a little bit more about it.
Just a question with the fiber, because we experienced that really bad ice storm a few years ago, and pretty much every pole, wire, and town were down. I mean, how quickly would that fiber get replaced?
So it all depends, you know. You typically have maintenance contracts, you know, in place with different providers. So if take the middle mile network, the NBI 123. We have Axia as our operator. Axia has enlisted contracts with several local regional companies. They have spares, fiber available. If we have a cut, they go out, they call the company in, they do an OTDR test, figure out where the break is, and run the cable if it has to be spliced. In a case of a catastrophic situation like that ice storm, we are in line, so power has to be restored first, and then the communications guys go in, So most of these communities would be second in line, after the power companies.
Yeah, I would think that somehow that cost would get transferred back to the user.
It's insurance, so insurance covers it. PERMA is the company that we've been talking with for last mile fiber networks, potentially maybe wireless too. We need to talk to them a little bit more about that. But the property and casualty, just like on your home, you're going to have a deductible, So on a minor cut, maybe you have a $5,000 deductible in your town, and those minor cuts come out of a different fund. This is how I'm giving a real life example how Leverett does it today. They have kind of a contingency fund. So anything that's minor cut, they take out of that contingency money. Anything that's major gets paid from insurance. Now we know what happens if you put in multiple claims in insurance. Your costs increase right over time, but it's not exponentially. I mean,
does the cost of the fiber per mile help? How much would come down? This would be, it's going to cost basically several million dollars just to put it in. Somebody will end up absorbing a good portion of that cost, I'm sure, somewhere along the line.
I know that during the bad ice storm, FEMA kicked in a lot of money too for some of the outages. So
they gave us some money for some of the work, but it was hard getting it. It wasn't a huge sum of money, but it was some.
Sure.
But the telephone company put up poles, but they probably surcharged us somehow in the bills, I'm sure. But it's the regular telephone line isn't very expensive to put back up compared to what fiber would be. So I don't know if there's any experience with the type stuff elsewhere. I'm sure there's been other things that
We budget that in. I mean, it's going to be a fraction of the operational cost, whether it's fiber or wireless for the maintenance.
Yeah, I was just wondering, I would think wireless would be less expensive just because there aren't wires.
Probably. Yeah. But again, it's not like it's a huge expense for the fiber.
Okay.
I think, too, that on the replacement cycle is somewhat a function of the demand of your community and what they're willing to pay for. It's kind of like people with computers. There are some people who upgrade their computer every year or 2 years, and there's other people who won't upgrade it until they stop supporting whatever it is. And a town like us, we would probably stretch farther out before we'd upgrade, simply because we would make do with what we've got before we spend a whole lot more money to upgrade it.
And anything's better than what we've got now.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, anyway, subscribers are signing up for a certain level of service. So you have the hardware to deliver that. That determines partially whether you want to upgrade. And perhaps they want to, you'll offer, if something better comes along, you can offer a higher rate of service for additional costs.
People can choose to replace their particular electronics at their nickel if they want it replaced faster.
Okay. Leslie, are you here?
I am here.
Leslie, Plainfield, what's going on?
Plainfield, like every other town, is looking at all options, basically, because, there's nothing else to do. We're in a pause. we are looking at all options, but we remain firmly committed to fiber, basically. We believe that we're not just looking for now, we're looking for 10 years, we're looking for economic development, we're looking for people to come in there who actually need home businesses and potentially businesses, and we're not seeing that even, you know, the word that, you know, we think we can reach 25-3 for most of our people, maybe. Technology is changing. It'll, you know, wireless will be better. That hasn't been tested. Are we going to be the test people? So those are the kinds of things we're thinking about. We've done a deep financial model. We've talked to our citizens overwhelmingly, and we're going to bring it back to town meeting again so that we can pass something on to the governor saying the whole town is behind this. So while we look at wireless, and we continue to look at wireless, we look at hybrid, we look at everything, our minds have not changed that fiber is the way for us to go. It is financially viable for us. And, you know, I think hands down, nobody suggests that wireless technology is better than fiber. And if you can possibly go fiber, you should. And if you can't, then you start looking at other options. So that's kind of where we stand. We're still firmly committed to fiber and have not heard anything that would change our minds to move forward. What we are concerned about is the pause. We are concerned about, you know, our townspeople are crazy. You know, they're crazy. They don't even ask me anymore how you are. I'll be better when I get fiber. That's the response to me. So we kind of stay with that.
Okay, thank you.
But we appreciate you guys. We appreciate being invited. We appreciate all of the learning that we get from all of this.
And it's not just the pizza.
Well,
darn good pizza.
Darn good pizza. When's your next meeting?
Okay, Colerain.
Well, Colerain's been meeting with Wendell and the communities kind of on the other side of the Connecticut River and Leiden. We're talking about working together on probably a hybrid model with fiber and wireless, because most of us have a lot of miles in town and we can't afford to put fiber down. So we're just in the beginnings, and we're going to start talking about, sustainability, how we might structure it so they're all working together, and that we have one somebody overseeing the whole network. But we're, like I said, we're just in the beginnings of that, and I kind of by default seem to be doing that work, and I'm not the best person to do. I'm a technical person, but not fiber and wire.
Quick question: could you get your friends from Wendell and Leiden in this room sometime?
Well, if they start traveling the day before, they might be doing meeting.
They're meeting tonight.
No, they're not meeting in there. It's next week.
Oh, it's next week?
It's
I had it on my calendar for tonight.
No, they canceled it for tonight.
I
will be there. But I will definitely go back to them and tell them about what's going on over here.
Okay. Well, welcome.
This Fred guy, I keep hearing about Fred Lowenstein.
Fred.
Goldstein.
And before any of us started pursuing Fred Goldstein, MBI had contracted with Fred Goldstein, and he did some tabletops, as we understand it, for Middlefield, Holly, and Savoy a year or two ago, before we ever started pursuing. Because when we called him, he said, I've got a lot of that data already.
So is MBI working with Fred? Is Fred one of those people that you're sending an RFP to, or asking an RFP from?
So Fred and InterIsle are an approved vendor with us already. They responded to a last-mile consulting RFP that we put out probably about 2 years ago. Prior to that, they were actually heavily involved with the grant process for the middle-mile network. So Fred and his team at InterIsle did a lot of the, call it like a pre-engineering, determining, you know, what CAI should be connected. They did some route work for us. And then one of the gentlemen that work there, they're kind of a group of consultants that work independently but all work for the same company. One of the gentlemen, Frank Jaffe, worked at InterIsle and ended up being kind of our overall project manager for the Middle Mile Network. So we have had a lot of interaction with InterIsle. And they were sent the copy of this BWA study as well. So
if they ended up getting the study, there might not be as much duplication of effort as there would be with someone else.
It sounds like...
It's an open procurement, so we won't answer that.
Yeah, yeah, that's a conflict. We'll get real, real deep into conflict of interest.
Yep.
One other question, just to clarify, when is this this meeting next week? Is it with Colerain and Wendell and so on? Is that open to the open to being visited, number one, and number two, if so, what day is it?
It's Thursday night at, I think it's 7. Is it 7?
It's normally 7 at
the
town hall.
7 o'clock at the Wendell Town Hall. And I'm sure you're more than welcome, as long as, you're polite.
They have asked.
It's a posted meeting, so I would assume
they have asked unless you're one of
the
towns.
They've
asked that
they've tried to limit it to a step forward and far advance
because they want
to
move forward with the working group. But it's an open meeting, so.
Okay, we have a couple of people here from, let me see if I get Washington and Beckett. What's going on your neck of the woods? We can answer one at a time.
Okay, I'm not here in an official Washington capacity. I'm here as an individual, primarily. Washington remains firmly committed to fiber, and they're not even looking right now at wireless, as Plainfield is. So I don't want this to be my presence here to be misconstrued.
Right, we're not looking at wireless either, so don't.
I can imagine Steve getting really pissed off at me just for being here, which is not at all. No. I'm being facetious.
Well, you might want to take that tag off your back when you're leaving.
Anyway, that's where Washington is. I'll tell you, part of the reason I'm here personally was because I feel, I am, as I said earlier, the chair of the Finance Committee, so I do feel some responsibility to be aware of all the conversations that are happening and to hear things firsthand as much as possible. So that's partly why I'm here. The other reason I'm here is because I personally, as a customer, have actually been on a number of wireless systems over the last 2 years, including Whitespace, a 900 megahertz and currently 2.5 gigahertz system. So I have additional questions I'm interested in asking, but I didn't want to interrupt your town reports.
Okay.
And I'll just, as a headline, my experience has been very mixed. So, that's where I am. So I'm not here to be a detractor or anything like that. I'm here, listen, if I have something to contribute from my own personal experience, I'm happy to answer questions, but it's just one small person's experience in one small circumstance, but...
Well, you're welcome.
That's why I'm here.
Okay. Beckett?
Beckett is also firmly committed to fiber. I'm here to learn, and I'm actually really supportive of the towns doing what's right for each town. I don't think that there's a one-size-fits-all solution here. I've had some conversations with Lark over the past couple of months because we're on a committee together, and he's explained to me very clearly that the demographics are much different in the smaller towns than in Beckett, that it's just much more expensive to build a fiber solution to the point where it's not practical. Beckett is the largest of these small towns, and it's quite affordable as far as we're concerned to build a fiber solution, but I'm very curious. My personal experience with watching wireless technology I've been very skeptical about it, and so I'm quite curious to hear these new technologies that are coming and to watch the experiments that are taking place and watch the towns that are actually trying this and where it's been successful. And I'm eager to learn and to, not just have the old tunnel vision that I had. I also want to give you an apology, Dave, and I sounded antagonistic before, but I'm actually not at all antagonistic to the work. I think that the way that you're proceeding is very sensible and very methodical and very much in the service of all the towns. The energy that I had before that I was speaking with is simply the energy of impatience. The people in Beckett and the people in a lot of towns really wanted something years ago. We want something now. We want something this week. We don't want something maybe next week, maybe next month. And so please don't take this personally. It's not intended to be a personal attack on you or anybody at MBI. It's just a symbol of the pent-up demand. I'm just voicing that pent-up demand.
Oh, that's fair, Jeremy.
And I
appreciate that.
In an antagonistic way. It really wasn't
intended. I appreciate that. And we've grown to be a little thick-skinned at some level, but, you know, it we do take it personally. You know, I mean, I have two folks that work for me, you know, on each side of me here, so at a level, maybe I take it personally from that standpoint as well, you know, because we are working extremely hard. We are moving the ball down the field. We haven't necessarily scored a goal yet. I understand that, you know, but we take the feedback. We appreciate the feedback here, whether it's good or bad, you know, and we certainly will take the messages back, you know, as we always do. As I said, we're not the political faction of the organization. We're the technical guys, you know, so it's a different
level. I think if there was one message to take back, and again, this is a message from the fiber towns, not necessarily from the wireless towns, is we like the solution that you presented us last year very much, and we bought it, and we sold it to the towns, and I've got $3.8 million of Beckett's money that's waiting for our $1.9 million matching grant, please, as soon as you can get it to us. And we like the work that you had done before very much. We thank you for that work, and we'd love to be able to move ahead with that work. So I think that's the message you can please take back.
And can I just interject? I think Levert did go ahead.
No, Levert went ahead with their own model before there was any state funding. The state
gave
them their money retroactively, but they went ahead as if they were going to have to pay for it on their own.
Right.
Beckett is not prepared to do that, and I'm not aware of any of the other towns that are prepared to do that, except for Alford, and I don't know what any other
Otis.
Otis are prepared
Princeton.
To go ahead on their own.
Princeton.
Okay. Yeah. So there are a few towns maybe that are looking, that are financially well off enough. Beckett is not one of those towns. We really do need that money from the state to proceed with the fiber build-out. But on the other hand, we're willing to put up a very large amount of money for a small town.
Yeah.
And I will say that is a very well-considered decision. There's been a lot of talk about sustainability. We're quite aware of what that's involved in. And we are quite confident that as these towns are talking about building wireless solutions and making them looking at sustainability, we are looking at sustainability, and we are quite confident that that is a workable solution. Based on Levert's experience and based on all the modeling that's been done.
Sure.
Did you guys look at all these different options when you made your choice?
We did not look at wireless solutions, no. Beckett is a very large, physically large town. We would have to put up a lot of towers.
But it still might be more affordable than the 3.8.
The affordability isn't the key issue for us. I mean,
if it was presented?
I'm not interested in presenting that. I want a solution. I work at home.
Yeah.
I'm an IT professional. I work out of my house. Currently, I'm fortunate to have a DSL line. So I'm looking at a solution that's going to be good for a little bit more bandwidth.
Okay. Thank you. Go ahead.
And I guess the other question, I think Leslie spoke to this, and I heard it in Jeremy's echo, is that when we're looking at economic development, wireless just doesn't have the same... Outside this room, wireless doesn't have the same pull for businesses or home-based professionals because a lot of us have had bad experiences with that. So if there's ideas here in terms of the way it's promoted or a way to talk about it differently, that would be really helpful too, because when we talk to IT professionals or people outside of this room, you know, people don't get excited about moving to wireless towns typically, unless it means really nice cell phone service.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, honestly, I wouldn't even have considered it 3 years ago, you know. But the technology has truly evolved and continues to at a very rapid pace, so we certainly understand.
Okay, we have one more report, and that's from Royalston.
To your question, we have 40-ish subscribers. Probably half of them are running their own businesses, including several IT professionals. And if they need 25 and 10, they're getting 25 and 10, and they're happier than pigs and fertilizer. What the problem that people seem to have is we offer 20 and 5 to everyone today, 20 and 5 to everyone.
20 and 5.
20 and 5.
Okay.
As the test. That's
not 25.
I'm saying we offer it 20 and 5. Okay. If you want 25 and 5, we change your bucket to 25 and 10.
Okay.
So, but for the test, what people, when we talk about 20 and 25 and 3, you're talking about making that available. Well, we're essentially making 20 and 5 available to everyone. 15% of the people are using 5 and 5. 35% are using 10 and 5. 35% of the people are using 15 and 10. And 15% of the people are using 25 and 10. That's what they're using. We don't charge for overages. There's no penalty for bandwidth usage. We've got people using 200 gigs a month, and we've got people using one. But it turns out that what people are buying is not the technology, but the experience. So when we turned the test participants into subscribers, we said, if you'd like some help choosing which package to buy, here's what your usage is in bandwidth, here's what you're actually using, and we would recommend X to match the experience you already have. So we ended up selling the customer experience, hello Steve Jobs, as opposed to the technologies. And we were told going in that everyone would gravitate to the cheapest package. Never happened. Just the opposite happened. We have 50% of our revenue above 10 and 5. 50% of our revenue, 50% of our revenue is above 10 and 5. And that's the basic service, is 10 and 5, the people. And it turns out that what people are using, not fantasy, what they're actually using, what their experience is what they're buying. If they want this experience and they've got five people in the house to do X, they get it. The other side of it is we had a 90% conversion of DSL users on homeowner easement, tech access easement, for people who said DSL is wonderful when it works at 3, we have people saving $2,000 to $3,000 a year on cell phone hotspots, several hundred dollars a month for HughesNet at $16 for every 2 gig overages. The most frequently used router in our network is what's left of the returned HughesNet systems. Simply reset, and now if you don't reset them, they're still programmed for HughesNet, but all you push the reset button and they work just fine as in-house, whole house routers. And that's pragmatic. That's not theoretical. That's not make-believe. That's not made up or hopeful. That's what people actually did. We gave it to them for free to try, to test what they're using, and we have all the data with coverage, with canopy and no canopy, etc. But we were really surprised to see that people would buy the experience.
So basically what you said was, instead of having a theoretical conversation about the relative merits of the system, you said, here, try this.
Yeah. Try this. And
that's
and
the way you get around it.
Use it for a while, and we'll figure out. Of course, we did have about a three-month interruption in which a major provisioner was giving us about 50% of the service we were buying, but once we got past that and the bandwidth jumped 80% for everyone in the town, it was pretty astounding. So we're really satisfied with a customer-centered approach, with a customer-centric approach that says what happens on the other side of the CPE is as important as the network design itself. And welcome to Steve Jobs. Okay. What's the experience?
He's dead.
Irrelevant.
No, I went on a couple.
He's dead. Yeah.
He's dead.
What? The other point is that
she's not going to get a part of that.
We have an internal, just one more point. We have an internal network that is a point-to-point network inside of our network that's operating at anywhere from 35 to 75 MIPS right now, wirelessly. We're delivering 20 and 5 on that network. So the internal capacity of the network is much higher than what we're provisioning. We went from 50-50 to 70-70. We're now using 70 down and 70 up as our provisioning. And we expect to be able to go to 50-50, not 25 and 5 within a year, because the technology is moving that quickly and it's remotely programmable.
John?
Yep.
Quick question. You said you've got 40 customers and you're now using 70 down and 70 up, which means those customers using close to 2 megabits a piece?
It depends. Again, the
give or take.
Nominally, you plan on a gig per person.
That's what I understood.
However, we took the approach that we're not going to charge for bandwidth, but if you want the higher bandwidth experience, you can pay the equivalent cost. And that's what people are actually doing. People are actually buying the experience, given the opportunity to have 5 and 20, you know, 20 and 25 and 10, 15% said, I want it all. And the others said they wanted, and it turned out that there's a pretty high correlation, close to 1, between what people are buying and what they have as an experience.
John, just a clarifying question. For those 40 people that you have now, you said about 40 subscribers, how much backhaul have you purchased?
70 for 70.
70 up and 70 down. Megabits. I see.
And we did that because there's a dramatic... We were at 50-50, but that was when we were getting about an 80% degradation in bandwidth.
You guys want to hit the road
so,
pretty soon.
And is that 70-70 so saturated, or is it do you a couple still more capacity?
Oh, no. We've got people coming. We've got people operating somewhere in the 60 range. So we typically have 10 to 15 megs available even at peak levels. And that's intentional because, as you know, on a wireless network, the heavy users get there first and take it off the top, and that crunches down. So going to 70 changed the way in which the network operates and access. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we're kind of pushing into the time when the MBI folks have to start heading east if they're going to get there before morning. So what I thought we'd do is just throw it open for a couple more questions for them before we move any further in the agenda. Go ahead.
Since you guys are technical, but this has got a little policy into it, because it's the next item on here, MBI's response to Princeton's overlashing proposal. Is there any from MBI?
We acknowledged it.
Well, thank you for at least acknowledging him.
And I can attest to that from the other side.
We've done a lot of studies on it. I'm joking. We actually received something from Marty, their new assistant MLP manager, this morning actually, on this subject. We are looking at it right now. And I have some proposals out, that would recommend that we allow it. But it's, it's one of those policies that would have to be made at a higher level than me. But I see value in it. I see savings. There's some contract things the lawyers would have to work out as far as making it work from an IRU perspective, some type of... agreement between potentially the towns, the MBI, MassTech, and our operator too. Where Axia would have to be involved in managing some of that overlash. It was interesting because Princeton came back this morning. Marty asked if he couldn't overlash, could we move your fiber? Which is actually a creative way. Potentially, if there's room in the communication space, that may be a workaround. So it doesn't help. It doesn't defer there. What they were trying to get around is one deferring some costs, clearly, right, to do the make ready. As they said, what Rick reported on, it sounds like they're running about $440 a pole for make ready costs. So it's not inexpensive. On middle mile, it costs us about $500 a pole. So it's very expensive to do make ready. So we're looking at it. We're looking at it. And
glad to hear that.
Yep.
At least it's not off the table.
Nope.
Dave, just a technical question about that. When the make-ready work was done initially for the middle mile, were the poles that needed to be remediated to a sufficient strength that they could withstand this overlashing if that were allowed from a policy perspective? So it's not a question of the technical capability of the poles. You wouldn't have to then re-remediate the poles.
That's correct. That's the perfect world, Jeremy, is that's what we hope, So when we did the middle mile network, all that stuff was looked at. The utility, the pole owners, whoever owned maintenance on those poles, whether it was Verizon, Grid, or Eversource, would have changed out the poles based on us adding our initial, MBI, the middle mile cable up there. Overlash, we will have to provide. It's a kind of a simple application. You tell them which poles, which licenses you're going to attach to or through, and they look for some indication that you're determining the weight of that new cable as well. And they'll look at it. They actually don't even go out into the field with it. They will only go out into the field at a later time, at their convenience, and look at what you did. But overlashing is very popular. Just look up don't look up when you're driving. but it's everywhere,
Take a picture of it.
Rick,
on your cell phone.
Question here, Rick.
Go ahead.
Dave, I know this is probably a policy, but somebody asked me to ask it. Not my question.
What do you mean, somebody? Is there somebody outside? Or
somebody actually from New Marlboro. So we border down in our corner of New York and Connecticut. If a town was to build their network and get your blessing, there are companies in New York and Connecticut that are wanting to bypass the middle mile and not use it. I don't know if it's more, it could be more cost effective. I can't see that it would be, but is that something that you can't answer?
So all I can tell you is that our policy says that right now that we don't expect the towns to use an alternative to the middle mile network. It was built for that purpose. And for the state to invest additional funds, it's like an overbuilt. It means that we doubled down and we got nothing back on this middle mile network. I've talked to other people. I've talked about when you typically do network design, you have a primary and secondary route. In areas where maybe we can't provide it, we could certainly entertain options of an alternative provider. But, again, nothing is off the table. We are open. We are here to listen. And certainly if somebody has something to propose, I will listen to it. So.
Dave, do you know if anyone else, laid a fiber line behind your lines at the same time, and fiber cable?
I'm not sure what your question is, John.
As you guys did your middle mile, did other companies laid their own lines in areas? Because we had heard that Verizon was doing some of that.
No, so there was some work going on at either Russell or somewhere.
In Savoy, they said they did.
In Savoy, and I can tell you that Verizon is not putting any Fios in these communities in any time soon, or to my knowledge, I'm not sure they will ever. But I can't speak for Verizon. I can only I go to our government rep, and I spoke with her, Ellen Cummings. Some of you folks are probably familiar with her.
Mm-hmm.
I spoke with her 2 weeks ago about some of the work that was happening out there recently in one of the communities, and she said, absolutely not, Dave. This is just network facilities. So it's network facilities between their central offices, their rate centers or wire centers. So they're just doing work, within their plant. Clearly they're not doing it to upgrade, DSL.
He said they were going behind at the same time.
No.
I couldn't prove it, I don't know what they were doing. But.
I mean, one, they couldn't overlash to our cable. We wouldn't allow them. Two, I mean, they likely already have cable in that communication space. Not likely, they definitely do because of any copper plant, because they're providing copper to every house.
you know, and they would have just overlashed to that. If it was fiber, then it was four. You know, their facilities probably enter wire centers or central offices or something in their network.
Dark fiber would be, their own dark fiber.
It's their own dark fiber. It's for their switch. It's for their switching network.
Okay, we got one now. Let's have one more.
How about two more? Mike, you're not looking this way.
Well, I'll look at the. I want to see you ask one question.
I actually.
Oh, here's a multi-part. You were right.
No, it's not a multi-part, but it's a big answer. Small question, big answer. And I appreciate you guys coming. I really do. I appreciate the conversation here that I had. I learned quite a bit. So don't assume that we aren't highly appreciative of the work that you're doing. But I was wondering if you could, given what you can do and your best guesstimate, forecast a year out. Where are we? So we know what we're doing in the next 6 weeks. We know what we're doing in the 3 months after that, right? So I'm just trying to get, because all of our towns are about the time. It's all about the when. The what, you know, quite honestly, the what we could probably massage. What we can't massage is the when. And so that's what I would like.
It's a great question. And what I can tell you is we are working on something similar right now for the administration so that we can show them what that plan is and show them what we want to do to move this forward. And basically so that we're all in sync, everybody's good, box get checked, and we move this thing forward. We're working on that right now. For me to project a timeline, it's beyond my pay grade, honestly. I couldn't speculate beyond the things that we're working on right now.
I have a follow-up.
Carol has a question.
Go ahead.
Relates to Greenfield.
My question was just going to be, I read in the paper that you've worked with the wireless program in downtown Greenfield, and I'm wondering if you know anything about it, how it's been received. I know I connect with it occasionally, not with very good results, but it could be because I'm in the back.
We don't. We FERCOG worked and has been working with Greenfield, but the MBI hasn't been that involved with that project. I looked at some of the work they were doing, but really, I don't know much about it. I really couldn't comment too extensively on it. I know they want to do something townwide now, and they're looking to really expand that network. So, you know, and it is a wireless, kind of a hybrid wireless network.
Is it the same technologies that are being evaluated in some of the pilots?
No, it's a little bit different. It's a Wi-Fi.
WiMAX.
Did you look at all that? WiMAX? I don't know what.
I think it's Wi-Fi. It's like a town-wide hotspot. Springfield did something similar, but it's not exactly the same type of equipment.
So the experience that you might have there wouldn't translate.
I don't think, clearly, you know, as the study, we'll look at all the technologies, and we've also, again, asked them to go out and look at what other communities are doing in Western Mass. And we'll make sure they look at that. But, you know, from my knowledge of it, based on they're looking at something that for a more densely populated community, I don't want to make a conclusion. We're asking the engineering firm to make a conclusion, but it's more heading in a direction of this fixed wireless, similar to what Royalston and Middlefield and Hawley have already kind of concluded.
So what we're talking about here is wireless ISP is establishing a fixed wireless solution that covers an entire town with multiple towers. And what I believe the Greenfield project and the Springfield project are a hotspot. Mm-hmm. So similar to if you go into a coffee shop and you're sharing it, you know, there, it's just bigger maybe for an entire green space or something like that. So it's the two different types of networks. Mm-hmm. One's more local and one's wide area.
And is it the same system? Sorry, I didn't mean to have a follow-up, but the same kind of security concerns or not? Like
you mean when you refer to security on the spectrum side?
On the spectrum side, yeah. Is it?
They're typically using the same spectrum, but it's just two different types of network.
If this can be the last one.
Yeah. Is there anybody at the table here who can tell me who erects towers in this part of the state? You know, because you need a 20-foot foundation and John.
Swansea, New Hampshire.
Swansea, New Hampshire.
Is the guy with the strongest rep that I know for towers
So it's Swansea, New Hampshire's the place. Do you know
is
the
guy? I don't.
It's not your.
No. But it's a person who has done a lot of towers in Massachusetts, and a number of the he did the tower in '68, and he may have done the tower in Warwick, and I'll send that information to the man on my left, and he can include it in the distribution document.
Good, because I mean that's obviously one of the major factors for us is we're not looking at towers that are accessible like the one that I've seen down in your place. We're looking at way off the road, up a wood road.
If you're looking at monopoles, that's one. There's another group which is a provider to town utilities that does poles,
yeah.
And 26 of our poles are going to be 55 foot.
Yeah, we don't think you'll have any.
Put them up in the morning, but
it's the big one where you got to drill a big foundation.
Yeah. The monopoles are much smaller base and pad than the
wooden. Okay, I'm gonna just say thank you, folks, for coming.
Yeah.
I have one last question.
Thank you all.
It's a policy question. Mm-hmm. Will you come back and see us sometime?
Absolutely.
If invited, yeah.
All right.
If this pizza ain't cupcakes. We'll see if he's still. If Leslie isn't invited.
There you go, guys.
Science 1, Christmas nothing.
This, well, this isn't the end of the meeting. We have to decide.
Dave, thank you.
I can't hear you.
Yeah, we do.
This was not the end of the meeting because we at least have to decide we're going to get together again.
Yes, definitely was. So I'll be good, guys. And just call a meeting and your local mayor. Yeah. Let me know. Good to see you.
Yeah. Thanks.
Rick, nice meeting you, sir. Nice meeting you. I left cards here if anybody wants them. Thank you, guys.
Good meeting you.
Success. Thank you for inviting us. Thank you for coming.
Thank you for coming out. Take your hammer. Who's that? Hey.
Are you going to ship the recording out?
Yes.
I don't think we plan to. Would you like us to?
Yeah, I'd like a copy. Yeah.
Okay. See if I can do that.
Agenda, but we've run out of time. So the question is, when do we want to set the next meeting for? 6 o'clock is the time. People seem to like to come here. We figured out a way to be able to help more people than we ever thought we could.
It's going to be in May, right, Larry? It's going to be in May, right, Larry?
It's going to be in May.
Well, let's get it past our town meetings and town elections and all the other nonsense.
Before we set it?
No, I mean, let's post the date sometime past all that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
You guys
are meeting
11 for your May
11th? Yeah. That's general warning stuff. So.
Our ATM is 24th.
Of which month?
May 24th.
That's a long time from now.
Well, yeah. I don't mean past everyone's town.
No, I know. I was asked a question.
This building is going to be in
How about the 12th?
How about the 12th?
I'm cool with 12th.
How about the 12th?
At 6 o'clock?
How about the 5th? The 12th to the 5th.
No, what day is it?
Thursday the 5th and Thursday the 12th.
Fifth is not good for us here in Holly because we're between.
So how about the 12th?
Yeah.
12th is good.
Okay, sure.
Thank you.
I just have to like make it smaller and all that stuff. Figure out, because it's going to be really big. I'll have to make it smaller.
That's all right, cut it up.
We'll figure it out. We'll figure it out.
It'll just download eventually.
Mr. Interim Chairman, I move that we adjourn the meeting. Do I have a second?
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye.